Blog Talk Radio.
Hello everyone, welcome to another edition of Down to the Biz. I am your host Bryce, welcome to the show. We've got a great show for you this week. We're going to be interviewing Robin Joseph. She's the founder and CEO of Lottie Dunn Music Supervision. You know, music supervision has become one of the most important positions in the music entertainment industry today, and we've got someone that's going to come on. Robin is an expert, and we're going to get to her in a second. And in a second, she's going to be letting us know everything about, you know, what she does, what goes into music supervision, and if you're looking to get into music supervision, what do you need to do? And if you're an artist, how do you get your songs into film, television, commercials, and what have you? We're going to talk about that with Robin, and she's going to give us all of the scoop on that. Well, thank you for tuning in. This is the show where if you want to know what the jobs are in the entertainment industry and music industry, you come to this podcast, and I interview someone every week, and they give us the lowdown on what they do. If you want to hit me up during the week, a question, or if you want someone interviewed for a certain position, email me at bryceb88@gmail.com, and I will get someone on, and we'll try to track them down and get you the information that you need. There are a lot of jobs in this business, and we highlight that on this show. Again, you're listening to Down to the Biz. So, as I said, we're going to interview Robin Joseph, founder and CEO of Lottie Dunn Music Supervision. Robin has done music licensing at New Line Cinema. She's played songs in American Gladiators and The Biggest Loser. Full disclosure, I've known Robin for a very long time. She is a good friend, and she is super smart when it comes to just the music industry in general and music supervision particularly, and I wanted to make sure I get her on and interview her. So without further ado, Robin, are you there?
I sure am. Hi, Bryce.
Hi, Robin. How are you tonight?
I'm doing great. Thank you for the very nice intro.
You know, the intro is very well deserved. I was looking forward to it. Just a quick story for the fans. I ran, you know, I always keep in touch with Robin, and I ran back into her for my birthday, and it immediately was like, I got to interview you because music supervision has become so important, and I had to interview Robin, so here we are.
Yes. There were two important things that night. I needed to try a cupcake, and they were delicious, and you needed to interview me. So we've got both done now.
So we got both done, yes. So let's jump into it for the people, Robin. We know a lot of people want to know what music supervision is all about and what it is. So why don't you just tell the people your background? Let's start with that, where you came from and how you got into this field.
Sure.
And how you started the company, and how you started the company, too.
Yeah, you got it. So it goes back, I can trace it back, basically when I was a teenager and I was watching films, and I took note of the music, especially in films, whereas, you know, I remember one film in particular I saw, and I was like, man, that film was horrible, but the music really saved it. And that's how I became really interested in music for film, TV, ads, things like that, but at that time it was mostly film. I was a huge music buff always. But then I started getting really into the music and film part. And being a kid in Michigan, I didn't know better. I figured, you know, that was just a, you know, a bonus for the director to be able to pick the music, because I really didn't think of it as a job at that point. I was like, that's just cool. So, I came to NYU to study broadcast journalism, and I learned a little bit more from my friends who were film students and realized that a music supervisor is a real position, and I was like, that's what I want to do. But like everyone who decides they want to do something had to figure out how to get there.
Right.
And I got there through working hard and some strokes of luck. And that's sort of been the whole way my career has taken shape. I was at NYU. It was Yom Kippur. I had just come from services. I was dressed nicely. It was the only time I was able to go see my journalism professor, advisor. So I go into the journalism building, and there's a posting for an internship at New Line Cinema. And, you know, since I just repented from my sins, I went from floor to floor and took every single flyer down. And then I called them. Because at that point, New Line was the company that I was like, oh, my gosh, they do such amazing stuff with music and film. They did The Wedding Singer. They did Friday. They did, you know, they were working on all this stuff, and it was just different films with really, really awesome soundtracks.
And Scream as well. The Scream franchise went through New Line, correct?
No. That was, I think that was Miramax. Scream wasn't ours, but we were also, you know, we had the big ones with, with like the Adam Sandler stuff and the Ice Cube films, but then we also were doing like Magnolia, so it was just from big to we did I Am Sam as well once I got there, which was all covers of Beatles songs. It was so cool, whether it was a big film or a small film, they were just into music, and I loved that. So I ended up getting that internship. It was in publicity, and I did a great job there. I've been working since I was 11, and whether I love my job or hate my job, I just try to do a really good job at it. And I was doing publicity. I was like, it's fine, but it's not really where I want to go. And they said, you know, well, what are you really interested in? I said, music. They said, you want to sit down with the senior vice president of music? I said, oh, my God, yes, like, finally.
Right.
Since I was 13 years old, I've been waiting to ask someone who does this all my questions. And so I prepared for that, sat down, started asking all these questions. And I guess they were intelligent enough to impress him, because he said after about 10 minutes, do you just want to intern here, you know, maybe next semester? And I said, yes. and then I got an internship in music, and which is where I learned the thing that sticks with me more than anything from that internship was my boss said that there's two kinds of music supervisors. There's idiot music supervisors and music supervisors. And at that point, I was in business affairs. We were working with the music supervisors, and we were working with the whole creative team in L.A., but we were doing the licensing side of things. And the difference between a music supervisor and an idiot music supervisor is that a music supervisor looks at the whole package. They look at what song is going to work great with the picture, what song is going to work great with the feeling, what song is going to work great with the mood. But at the same time, they also are very cognizant of which song is going to work in our budget, which song is going to work with us legally, which ones are going to work with our time parameters. There's just so many things that go into being able to use a song that if you're not aware of both the business, legal, time, and creative, you know, if you're not well-rounded, you know, there's a lot of people out there who also have, you know, great taste in music. There's tons of people. You know, sometimes people are surprised. I'm like, oh, if you're going to go for music trivia with me, take someone else on your team. I need my reference materials, because it's not a matter of just knowing all the songs. Because I hear so much music, it's a matter of, for me, and some people, there's some music supervisors out there who are encyclopedias, and they amaze me. But for me, it's about knowing my reference materials and going back and going, okay, I was thinking about this. There's this song that I heard, and I've always thought it would be great for this. And it's going backwards. So... just to jump back in, I got my start at New Line. I ended up getting a job working in clearance and licensing, and I learned business affairs, and then I got the chance to become the music supervisor for Queer Eye for the Straight Guy. And that is when I went out and started being a music supervisor, and hopefully not an idiot music supervisor. And I started my company, and I have had the great fortune to work on the reboot of American Gladiators. I did consulting on a couple episodes of The Biggest Loser. I've worked on indie films. I have done, you know, now music supervision encompasses much more than just television and film. There's ads, there's web, there's webisodes, there's live streams, there's so many different avenues for media that needs music. And it's fun. It's fun to be able to work on a variety of projects. That's where I am today.
Absolutely. And, you know, you covered just a lot of things there. Getting back to just the company in general, what was the moment that made you say, you know what, I need to start my own company to be able to work on my own projects, to kind of bring my expertise from what I learned? What was the thing that kind of got you there?
You know, I always wanted to, and most music supervisors are freelancers, and a lot of them start their own companies or start a company with a couple of people. You know, it's a pretty small industry, and, you know, there's a lot of fending for yourself. And I was always trying to work up to that. I loved being at New Line. I loved learning the business side of things, and I was waiting for the right opportunity to be able to bring, you know, to put my creative back on that. And I actually got the job as the music supervisor on Queer Eye. I wasn't looking to leave New Line at that point. The idea of going out and going on my own was still sort of down the road. And I actually was looking at a job listing for an old intern of mine who I thought was great. So I said, you know, if you're ever applying for a job, let me know and I'll, you know, see if I know someone there or, you know, put in a good word for you. And they sent me this job and they said, you know, hey, can you look at this? Do you think I'd be good for this? Or do you know anyone here? And it was one of those things where it said, other jobs you may be interested in. And it said, music supervisor, Queer Eye for the Straight Guy. I was like, you have got to be kidding me. This is what I have been working for. And I think that may have been one of the only cover letters that I wrote that was any good. it was really like, this is what I've been working towards. And I think that actually came across in my email to them. And we had a great meeting and we met, you know, we saw eye to eye creatively, and we saw eye to eye on timing and things like that. And it was a ton of fun.
So then kind of lasering in on that, let's give the people just the very basic nuts and bolts. So Queer Eye for the Straight Guy comes, Lottie Dunn is ready to go, contract's done, they want to hire you, they do it. What are the next steps that go into getting the music into the show? Like, what are some of the things that you're doing now? Okay, now I'm ready to go, I'm working. What's the checklist? Like, got to do this, got to do this, got to do this to get the ball rolling. What are the details that go into that?
You are diving in head first. Once you are on a show, and especially on television, it is ready, set, go. You are working with the producers, you're working with the editors, you're working with, you know, whomever is involved in the creative team to really get a feel for what they're going for. And the music supervisor is kind of a unique position. I think the people who do it really well and the people that I look up to are the ones who can really translate the feelings and emotions that the director, the producer, the rest of the creative team is trying to get across. And you can get so much with the acting and you can get so much with the cinematography, but if the music detracts or doesn't add to what you're going for, you just don't have that whole package. So it's a matter of, you know, when you're choosing music, and I think this is the hardest part when you first get started, is you're sitting there, you've been waiting, and you can hear it in your head. You know these songs are awesome, and you pitch them to your creative team, and they all get rejected. And it's at first, and if you stop right there, at the end of your career, if you take it personally, then, you know, you're done for. So I think one of the things that I had to learn very quickly, and I did know this going into it as well, because, you know, I saw so many creative choices when I was working on the business side. I even though it was from a bit of a distance, I saw how many different creative choices got passed over or run through for whatever reason. But when you are the one who's coming up with these ideas, you really have to check your ego at the door, because there's 9 other people with opinions. So you're just 1 of 9, you know, and your name is not at the end of produced by. So you are just there to be a conduit of continuous, excellent music. And, you know, it's one of those humbling moments where you have to make sure that you go, oh, yep, I am part of a team. This is what it feels like.
So with the music you're picking, are you going to your own library of songs that you know, okay, these are the songs that I want to pick? Do you have to call on the label to find the songs? Like, what's that process like to find the specific songs that you want?
So it depends on the project. When I was working on Queer Eye, we had deals with a couple of libraries, so that, you know, if we weren't going to spend a ton of money, we could go to those libraries. But the thing with Queer Eye is each episode we tried to match the music to the personality of the straight guy. So if we had a guy who played in a country rock band, and his whole thing was that he's a little bit country, our show had a little bit country feel to it. We had guys that lived in Manhattan and were trying to propose to their girlfriends, we were going for a little bit more of a, you know, an urban elegance or a refinement, because, you know, they're now moving into the next phase of their life. So we always had one guy who was really into Renaissance fairs, and Baroque music suddenly became the thing that I was listening to. So you've got all the music that you listen to and you love and you think you want to use, but then when you get immersed into a project, you have to check what you love aside a bit. Sometimes you can draw from it, but usually you start having to listen as that production. And it's, you know, re-listening to the music that you have in your library. When you're looking for something pivotal, that's when I call on the labels, the publishers, and the pitching companies that represent artists for searches. And, you know, when you're really looking for that song that's going to make a difference, that's when you call on, you know, reinforcements. And you send a note out to the people that you know are going to send you songs that match what you're looking for. And I think that's something that's so important for artists, because, you know, music, yes, one sync can help you. You know, a great sync can all of a sudden bring so much recognition to an artist overnight. It doesn't happen as much today, but 10 years ago, you know, people were breaking left and right off of Grey's Anatomy. So that's when people were really, you know, coming at music supervisors from all angles. And I think it's hard when you're attached to the music that you love, and you're sending it to someone and you think it'll be great. It's just like when we go in, with a song that we think is going to be great and hear from the producers, okay, let's come back and get some more options for this scene. So I think that that's difficult for artists. But also there are so many artists, and I still get pitched things that don't fit what I would be looking for at all. So, and professionals sometimes are guilty of this. You know, some companies, you know, just want to show their artists that they're pitching things that they'll, you know, send stuff to me that doesn't match at all. You know, now, today, in addition to my company, right now, I'm also full-time on the Rachel Ray Show. And I work off of a library of music that we have for the most part for our day-to-day shows, but for our special shows and our promos, I'm going out and looking for songs. And I've got a pretty specific and pretty detailed search that I send out to folks for promos, because I know exactly what we're going to say in a promo, and I need a song that has that. And you'd be surprised how many people don't listen to that and just pitch me a single. And that's the frustrating part, and that's something that both pitching companies and artists, if they do it themselves, that's really a big pitfall for them.
So now, when you say, we'll get to that in a second. When you find that song, because you're talking about finding the right song or the right number of songs for scenes, when you find that song, what is the process like to go ahead and make sure that you can legally use that song in whatever film or webisode or wherever it's going to go? What do you have to do to go about getting that song ready to be cleared and be played in the film or in the visual piece?
Doing your research. And great artists will actually include the writer or the publisher or the label in their metadata on their tracks when they send it to you. The really good pitching companies do that too. They say, you know, 50% publishing with X company, 50% with other X company, label at, you know, or master at X label. So all you have to do
just
is
for
click on that.
For our listeners. And for our listeners, just real quick, that's the splits of the song on who owns what part of the song.
Yes.
So they understand what the 50% is, right?
Sorry. You know, I always say that music licensing and music supervision, it's like a foreign language. And once you speak it, you speak it fluently. But if you don't speak it, it sounds like I'm talking to you in pig Latin and Mandarin. It just makes no sense.
No problem. We just wanted to make sure that for the people out there that don't
know.
When we say 50% and all that, we're talking about who gets what percentage of the songs, the writers or what have you. But continue,
we
want
to make sure
so
that all of the writers are accounted for. A lot of times I see, especially with younger artists, they hear stories about how people want things that are easy to clear. And when we say clear, it means get in touch with all of the writers or publishers. And everyone who owns the master. So they'll sort of fudge the truth and just say that there's one writer, and then after we use it, we find out that there were three, and now there's two people who we didn't get permission from. That's one of those things that will get you banned from being used on an entire network. Those are things that nobody wants to run through. You know, some people may want to just deal with one person who's the artist and the writer, and they own it, and that's it. I'm not that way. As long as I know who owns what and that I've reached out to all of them, that's fine. I mean, I worked on, when I was at New Line, I was working on all of the films that were hip-hop and rap. We had 17 writers on some songs. That's a little crazy. But three writers, as long as you give me contact information or I can find the contact information for them, fine. If it's a great song, I just want to know, honestly, who owns it and how to get in touch with them. So when I have a song that I think will work, I go out to the publishers or the writers and I go out to the label, and I don't like to play games. I'm pretty much a straight shooter when it comes to budgets, because I just feel like everybody is busy, and I like to go along with, you know, I have really strong relationships with a lot of people in the business who represent a lot of writers and a lot of artists. And the reason is because I'm honest. When I've got money, I want to give it to the songwriter and the artist. When I don't have money, if they don't want to work with me, that's fine. You know, but I'm not one of these people who goes out there and says, oh, I only have $500 because I want to look good, you know, and come in so far under budget. You know, we have a budget. I've always come in at or under budget, but not to the detriment of the artist or the songwriter.
So then, in that sense, who determines what the budget is for the songs? That you doing that, or is that kind of given to you from the producer or director?
It's given to me, and it's given to me usually from the get-go. This is your music budget. If it's a film, you've got a budget of X, and we need X number of songs. For television shows, it's usually by episode. You have a budget per episode or per week, and you've got to stay within that. But, you know, when there's a minor use, you won't get as much money. It won't be budgeted for that. But when there's a big, major, pivotal use, there's going to be a budget for it. And, of course, the budget, you know, varies based on what kind of show or film or what kind of rights we're looking for. But, you know, if I'm looking for something that's going to be a big use or a promo or something like that, you know, we make sure that we pay accordingly. And that's one thing, you know I've lost jobs because they've asked me how much, you know, I take creative calls with the producers and to see if we're going to be a good fit. And I know for a fact there are several films that I did not get because I told them exactly how much I thought the songs that, you know, they were looking at would cost. And they were so far out of their budget, the producers thought I was crazy. But I know how much music costs. I've been licensing it for years. And sure, there's a couple people out there who will tell you that they can get it for less, but, you know, you hire them and then you don't get it for less. So
right.
I'd rather let you know what's up ahead, and either we can find a great alternative, or, you know, it's better. I always think it's just better to bottom line with everybody and just be honest about it. And if working together right now isn't going to work out, then we don't work together right now. But at least, you know, we were honest with each other and we can work together down the road.
So then, kind of piggybacking off that, you talked about budgets and budgets for different uses. Can you touch on what are some of the different uses for a song in a film or TV?
Sure. At this point, there's so many different ways that things can be used. But if we're just talking film, TV, you know, there's the background uses, just a song playing in the background. Sometimes you hear them a little bit more, you know, when someone walks into a bar, you hear something, and then it sort of fades into the background. But some of the more featured uses for a film or television show are when there's a montage or the main titles or the end titles. Those are uses that really can command a bit more than just a regular background use, which is the most common use. You're mostly finding music that's going to add to the scene, and it's just going to be in the background.
Right. So then, in finding your music, we've got about 10 minutes left, but I want to ask you a couple more questions. So finding your usage, now that mixtapes and freemium models and free music have become so prevalent for artists to promote themselves, how has that impacted the way you go about finding music?
Well, it's kind of a double-edged sword. There's so much music out there that it's really hard for me to find all of it. And with mixtapes and a lot of the different free releases that are out there, a lot of those artists haven't been well-versed yet in publishing shares or writer shares or who owns the master. So I'm often hesitant to actually license music that comes to me that way. When I talk, if there's something that's great, I'll reach out. But when I hear from an artist and it sounds like they don't understand what I'm asking when I'm asking about clearing the song, I'll tend to hesitate and see if there's something else. I really, really, really can't recommend enough for artists who are out there, who are getting started, who are looking to represent themselves. It's about education. You know, as much as you need to learn to play the guitar or to play piano or to rap or to sing and you practice that, you need to spend a little bit of time learning what goes on in the music business. I mean, there's a couple of books that if you have them as references, you'll understand what I'm asking you and you'll be able to give it back to me. Right. So that I know that I'm dealing with someone who, you know, when they sign that paper and it says that there's two writers, I feel comfortable that there's just going to be two writers.
Right. Absolutely. So it's interesting because you have so many people using free music to promote their projects. So maybe the assumption would be you as a music supervisor, oh, man, you've got all of this free stuff, and now you can kind of go to it and not spend as much money, but you're saying it's a little bit more than that, more involved, because you have to clear the music, and there's that being a music supervisor versus being an idiot music supervisor, as you said, just finding someone replacing them, but thinking of the whole picture.
Yeah, but, you know, keep in mind, I'm also a music fan, so when people are out there using some of those, you know, using mixtapes or free models to get fans and to get, you know, bigger shows and work on their live show and to grow their fan base, I'm going to start hearing about those artists from other places as well. So,
right.
You know, there is a value in it. It's just not necessarily the first place that I go when I've got my music supervisor hat on.
Right. Absolutely. So, just transition. We've got about, I would say, 8 minutes left. I want to ask you, for the people out there that, you know, they want to kind of do what you do, they want to get into music supervision, and then second part, for the artists and people out there who are musicians that want to get in touch with people like you to get their music played. So for the first part, what would you say to those people that want to get into music supervision, and then what would you say to those artists and creatives that want to reach out to people like you to get their music placed? What's some advice you can get them?
All right. So if you want to get into music supervision, I would say to learn the music business, learn about publishing, learn about labels, learn about how managers work, learn as much about the business before you just jump into music supervision. It can help you immensely. My time working at a studio helped me. So that I understand what goes on from a big studio or working on a network show, knowing what a network has, you know, in their involvement as well. But I also work for a publishing company, and I work directly with managers, so I know what's happening when I send out those requests or I send out those creative searches, and that's helped me as well. So I would say to learn as much as you can and then, you know, either work with, you know, a filmmaker. I always say creatives should surround themselves with creatives. So, you know, when there's a band out there that's like, oh, I don't know how to put together art for, you know, my T-shirts or my, you know, my album or, you know, my webpage, I'm like, why don't you have artists around you? Why isn't there a photographer that you're friends with or a creative designer? You know, when you have those creatives around you, you get better as a creative just because you're influenced in different ways. So most music supervisors that have long careers have had them because they worked with a director or producer from the get-go. So it's not a surefire way, but it's one way. And the other way is, you know, finding a music supervisor who needs help and is ready to take you on as almost an apprentice. As for artists, this is where I can go on for a long time, but I'll try to keep it to my best points. What everyone will tell you is that when you present yourself to a music supervisor, you need to put your best foot forward. When you're sending out music, you send your best tracks. You don't bombard them with every single track you've ever done. You put together a very concise pitch, essentially, of who you are and honestly what your music is. I can't tell you how many times I got things that was like, "Hi, I'm so-and-so, I sound like Coldplay." And I play it, and it's like, there's nothing that sounds like Coldplay in here. You know, you don't have to sound like someone else. You have to sound like you. But you also need to learn how to accurately describe yourself.
Right.
And when you send out music that's downloadable, you need to make sure that when I put it into iTunes, the track name comes up. This sounds so basic, but I can't even tell you how important this is. You need to make sure and send it to your mother, send it to your grandmother, send it to someone who has no idea what they're doing to make sure it works. But you need to make sure that that track has the name of the track, the artist's name. If you want to be three steps ahead of the game, you put in all the writers. And under comments, you put a place for someone to contact you if they're interested in licensing it. That puts you light years ahead. But I can't tell you how many times I've downloaded music and it comes up as track 01 or artist name track 1. And I've got tens of thousands of tracks in my iTunes, and I just delete all of those. If they don't have your name or the track name in there, it's of no use to me. I'm never going to find it again. So that's how you can best present yourself. But in terms of getting music heard, I really firmly believe in working with pitching companies because there's a lot of companies out there. You don't have to get signed to a pub deal. You don't have to get signed to a label deal. But if you're a good writer, there are good companies out there that represent artists specifically for Sync. And it makes it a lot easier for me because I get dozens of emails from just individual artists, and it's not always what I'm looking for. But when I go to these pitching companies, I know that they represent so many different people that whatever I'm searching for, they have something. Right. And it also helps the artists because they're out there pitching to other music supervisors, they know what a fair fee is and they know how to give you a good license. So it's a protection for an artist. And, yes, you have to be prepared to give up a percentage of your fee, but these people work really hard. It's hard to get a placement of an artist's work in any film or television show or ad. And good companies work hard for you, even if you're not seeing a ton of results from the beginning. It's just hard. But I do think that these companies really, really can help out because with all the nuances of what fits creative, they know it. And it also allows the artists and the songwriters the opportunity to have someone representing them on that side so they can focus on writing more music.
Great advice. Great interview. Great information, Robin. Thank you for joining me. If now's the time, you know, let the people know how to get in contact with you if they want to hire you or if they want more information on music supervision or just to reach out. Anything you want to tell them, Twitter, Facebook, whatever that is.
Best way actually to reach me is email. You can get me at latidunmusic@gmail.com. You know, if you've got a good pitch, hey, bring it. If you've got some questions, go ahead, let me know. And sometimes I'm a little slow to respond because I do get a ton of emails, but I will get back to you, and I do read every single email that comes in. So.
And if you, when you reach out to Robin, just tell her that you heard her on Down to the Biz, spitting a lot of knowledge, and you wanted to reach out. Robin Joseph, founder and CEO of Lottie Dunn Music Supervision. Thank you, Robin, so much for coming and letting me interview you. It was a great interview. You gave the people a lot of information, and that's why we do what we do.
Hey, I'm happy to do it, and you know, if you get questions, I'm always happy to come back for a follow-up. So
hey, we may have to do that. So thanks, okay. Robin, appreciate the time.
Thank you.
So
have
everyone, yes, you too. Everyone, we're listening to Down to the Biz. Thank you for tuning in this week. Again, if you want to hit me up, I'm your host, Bryce. Hit me up at bryceb88@gmail.com if you have a question, or if you have, you know, a comment or someone that, you know, you want to hear get interviewed, a certain industry or certain, you know, position that you're interested in, let me know and I'll try to track someone down. But thank you for tuning in, and stay tuned for next week's show, where I'll have another person to interview, and we'll get you more information, the jobs and what people do in the music entertainment business. This is the show that answers that question, what do they do? This is Down to the Biz. I'm your host, Bryce, signing off. Thank you for tuning in, and I'll see you next week.
Living right, asking what I'm doing, trying to stay alive.